in the discussion, Ray, that people turn to zoning to get it, to back away from this argument of you've got to go all one way or all the other way. And so that in some cases, you could zone so that a permit was required for any kind of withdrawal. And in other cases, maybe you wouldn't have to have a permit. But the zoning, I heard you saying, was the vehicle by which you achieve some kind of compromise.
Well, sure. I mean, you're looking at how do you set up administrative procedures for handling something. And you've got to have your procedures a very minimum in relation to what you want to do. And if you come in like most of these people we're talking about, just make everybody all over the state get a permit to make a well. And what would that, I mean, first place, you didn't have enough people to record that. You couldn't possibly record that. You're having a hard time recording the big one. It would be impossible. People wouldn't stand still for it. They wouldn't accept it. So it's kind of a administrative relationship to what you want to do. In different areas, you have different things that are most important to do. Now, I guess a person should. Doug, you're the one that ought to really say this, but it doesn't really make much sense to zone unless you got some ideas that you think should be done, should be carried out. And the zoning is simply a device for carrying out those ideas in the minimum effort. I don't know if that. What?
Well, I wanted to get into the tape your attitude on the function of zoning.
Okay, now if I understand, you're using zoning in a specialized sense of the word. Not land zoning, but you're talking about water zoning. You're talking about establishing special rules depending upon the groundwater condition depending upon the water conditions
availability in
a particular area.
Demands on the water in
so
that area.
So you might require well permits in the Milwaukee area where you've got a drawdown problem, where you get up in the Central Sands area, you wouldn't require permits. Well, just as a matter of curiosity, I don't know that anything has been done with that concept in Wisconsin. There aren't any regions. It's all still statewide water law, isn't it?
Yeah, especially with regard to, right now we're in the process of promulgating groundwater rules. But I have to confess that I haven't been involved very much in the development of those rules, but I would be very surprised if they looked at a regional approach to groundwater use regulation, which is what you're talking about. It seems to me that what Ray has suggested is the development of regional provinces, groundwater provinces, within which either on the basis
of
supply.
We're talking about groundwater. We're talking about all water.
All water. Yeah. Well, I mean the two divides aren't very far apart. If they're far apart at all, if they're different at all, no. So you could. We regulators are I think, rightly accused of splitting things, splitting things up into what we consider to be manageable or understandable pieces before we attempt to come up with any kind of regulations. We tried in the middle 70s to come up with a comprehensive set of regulations that would treat all the water and simply say that
that was McDonald's
too, but we thought that we were doing something that Coates had suggested in 1955. But we were organizing his thoughts as regulators would, have to organize in order to make the regulations go. But that didn't get anywhere, and the McDonald's effort didn't get anywhere. And these new rules that are being developed are groundwater rules, and so again, they aren't going to take a regional perspective.
Well, they're related, as near as I can tell, to quality, and they're related specifically to hazardous waste and and mining. So that they apply only to specific kinds of activities.
Yeah, probably there are a couple of things. One, the state, because of the Water Quality Act of 1965, which was a federal act, and the amendments in 72, have come up with standards that apply to streams, the swimmable and fishable and that kind of thing.
Also drinking water.
Yeah, and have come up with standards, effluent standards, that are administered through this discharge program, that are perhaps the, you know, the broadest viewed regulations that are in place, that it broadly viewed in terms of a whole reach of stream or a whole stream. But there was in the 1965 Water Resources Act a charge to the then Department of Resource Development to do water plans, which, quite frankly, were never done. But that may have been...
Even before that, the State Planning Board, when Torkelson first started in the 30s, one of their reports, and I don't have a copy of it, one of their reports had the state, had different areas in the state marked out for different kinds of water use. Maybe it wasn't just water, maybe it was some other things, but Torkelson used this in his State Planning Board reports.
The reason I picked this out, it fits with what I well understand your philosophy about letting the people take part in this decision. And yeah. I was struck by the use of the zoning idea conceptually to do this.
Yeah, well, no, that, I don't want to take all the credit for this. I think this, more than anyone, is Jake's. It came out of a seminar from someplace, and Jake is the one that put it down and talked about it first. Well, we all did. But I don't think that kind of zoning is much different than land use zoning, Doug. I mean, actually, what you're doing on shoreline zoning, land use zoning, is setting up some kind of plans of what is there and what should be there, what you'd like to have there, and drawing some lines around it and saying, in this you do this, and in that you do that. And not trying to make uniform regulations of everybody, but make the zones so that you can accommodate most of the uses, most of the needs.
Yeah.
But you gotta have a plan before you can have a zone. You gotta have some kind of information of what there is there, what's going on, what might happen, and what's available to use there, what kind of regulations. And they've got to be integrated in a zone, in a zoning by zoning.
That isn't how it works, but that's what you should do.
Well, I don't know.
There wasn't any plan, was there, that backgrounded the shoreline zoning aspects of 614?
Sure there was.
Was there?
How did you guys do it?
Well, who figured out 1,000 feet around Lake Pond or Floyd is an adequate jurisdiction within which to protect?
Over the years, a lot of people.
3 tiers of lots.
No, what about?
I mean, it wasn't.
You know, it seems to me that in that whole process, as I recall it, there were standards developed or existing standards changed that certainly could not be described as being part of a great rational plan.
But yeah,
Nobody said an irrational
plan. You know, they were little things that grew up over time, well, that started somehow, and generally speaking, the standards got doubled in that process. Separating distance, for example. It used to be the separation distance for a septic tank or a tile field from the water's edge was 25 feet. Well, it got to be 50 feet or something like that.
Where did we go one time up around Wisconsin Rapids? We went back in there, and we were thinking about these setback lines. They went back in there and, my God, they won't work here. we talked to the guy, how would you do this? And out of it came some suggestions and as to what you do. I don't remember what they were.
Okay, well, maybe we have a different definition of planning.
Well, I guess that's right.
Well, I think Ray is probably using the concept of plan in terms of, at a very minimum, some forethought about the thing. But in addition to that, probably some policies, identifying some policies you're trying to...
Some policies?
And some standards
and
to go
and
on.
And bringing the experience of people.
Okay.
Bringing the experience of people onto the policy before it is firmed into ice or steel.
Okay. I got to quarrel with that, and I think I agree with you that there was some thought that was put down on paper before 614 came along. But I guess maybe I'm developing a certain cynicism regarding the land use, rational land use planning, as I have that described to me by a number of people.
Well, you can be cynical if you want to.
I don't want to be, but that's, I mean, that's when I look at what...
This is not your post-retirement analysis.
I
got to
get my oar in the water.
You may
maybe
be,
by that time I'll become philosophical.
You'll be right. You won't be cynical anymore. You'll look at it all with a golden glow of hubers.
Well, I was going to say that this isn't the time to talk. I'm glad we're going to talk about Ray's experience with land tenure in the center and everything, because this isn't the time for us to reminisce about shoreline zoning. There are too many other people around to remember.
Well, but it ought to be said that you three guys did make something out of that shoreline zoning land part of the law, 65 law, which was one of the things that came in there without anybody knowing about it. I mean, that was really out of the back end of the file drawer.
For the record, make sure you're talking about Harkin and not me on that.
Yes, yes. Duncan Harkin, yes. and Ed and Doug.
And Doug is the principal. But there had been some floodplain zoning discussed by a previous session of the legislature, hadn't there, Doug?
Mm-hmm.
Or discussed previously, perhaps, in the same legislative session.
Both.
Well, okay. one of the things dealing with water, I might say just a word about, and that was how we got you involved in that awful shoreland zoning development program. Not awful, I shouldn't say.
You're cynical, right?
No, but the Northern Lake States.
The Upper Great Lakes Regional Commission?
Upper Great Lakes.
That sounds like you're about to throw up or something.
Yeah. Wanted something in the way of an effort to show how to develop Lake States region. And they wanted. It was three states. There were three states in that region, and they wanted something for Wisconsin. And what happened was that it was sent to Wisconsin, and one group of university professors said, "Let's try to get $3 million for dredging streams." And about this time, Ed and Don Schenk and I went for a ride through the northern Wisconsin and talked about this all the time we were up there, saying that there should be more done with that money for development than dredging. That shouldn't be it. And out of that came a meeting at which the commission sent it back to us and said, "Can't you do something better than that?" And we had a meeting, and it ended up with Ed and what's the guy's name?
Well, it was Don Hall to begin with, but it was then Tom Wirth came along, and Bill Trinan.
Bill Trinan and Wirth. Well, anyhow, in the process, we were able to set up a proposal that would be joint between the conservation Department and the University Extension, and the operation was to be to assist people clean up their lakes and improve their shoreline. And how much did they give us the first year? They gave us quite a bit to run this project.
Probably total $1 million or so.
And Ed was director. Ed Brick became director of that thing, and Doug Yangan and
$1 million Eddie was known as.
Well, we started working on that when Ed went to the Conservation Department. Bjorn came along and was director. That project has ended up being I don't know quite what it is now exactly, but it's a permanent agency. It's a permanent appropriation for a joint action between the two agencies. It's mostly now deals with in-lake improvements. But while Ed was there and while I was had anything to do with it, we tried to tie the shoreline development with the improvement in the lake. And that's what we stopped to see this last month. We stopped to see all those proposals that we worked with to try and see what they would do. But that's something that was tied into water use.
Water, you bet.
Well, I guess I don't want to go into a discussion of this because I've written a history of land tenure center. But my contact with water sort of dwindled a little bit between 1962 and 65, when the Land Tenure Center was started. And that involved $1.5 million from AID to do research and training on land tenure, land ownership in Latin American countries. So that's quite a bit of travel involved in it. I don't think we want to go into much more than that.
It might be interesting, Ray, is in your written history, do you make the connection between the World Land Tenure Conference in 51 and the emergence of the Land Tenure Center? Is that fairly well written down?
Yeah, I think so, but it's worth saying something here. You remember at the beginning of our tape here, I told about this seminar, Land Problem Seminar. Carstensen and Borscher and I developed the water program. Either just before or just after, Parsons and I developed, Parsons mainly, it was mainly his idea, took that same seminar and had it devoted to world land tenure problems. And it was started because Parsons had four students worked the summer before on regional land tenure problems. There's Edmundo Flores, a Mexican, Raleigh Barlow, a Michigan State professor, and a couple others, I don't remember who. And these were to be the basic research that went into the seminar, plus a lot of other experience on the campus. So we had this seminar all during the whole year seminar on world land tenure problem. And it was out of this that the dean recommended that this land grant college work with AID on land tenure problems. When the AID said, what can the university do to help us? Our dean said, we can help on land tenure.
This has to be from her. Or was that before?
This was Fokker and Noble Park.
Yeah.
And so out of it, we had a lot of experience and we felt kind of confident in what we could do. We wrote, Bill Sewell and I wrote a 2-page letter, which the dean sent to AID, and AID says, make it work. And so we tried, and they sent us a letter saying that they were ready to finance it. They sent that letter in March or May or something, spring. And by the 15th of October, the first one was here. Ollie Atiga was the first one. We had 120 participants from 40 countries, different countries in the world.
I don't think I ever worked so hard in 6 weeks in all my life as that time period.
I think it turned the whole university around, yeah, actually. We would get a speech at 5 o'clock at night, and 8 o'clock the next morning, it would have been translated, typed, reproduced, and available on the when they came in to the meeting, and there would be simultaneous translation of it as he gave it by the language department. Well, that group of people had a steering committee, and they wouldn't allow anybody from the university on it. You remember that? Nobody could be on the steering committee.
Of the delegates who came here.
Of the delegates, yeah, who came here. And if there's something they didn't like, they said so. They told us so. And they made a report. At the end of the report, at the end of the conference, a group of the members participants were going to Rome, and they passed a resolution in FAO for FAO to set up an agrarian reform program in FAO. Another one of their resolutions, though, in this report was to establish a central library on land tenure here at the university. They said you can get more stuff on world land tenure right here than you can any place else in the world. And they wanted it to continue. And then they wanted a land tenure center established here and available to the countries of the world. If they needed help, they could get help. And they wrote that down, a report. They adopted the whole report. And that became the guiding rules of the land tenure center when it was started in 62. The university didn't get involved with AID between 51, when that conference took place, and 62, when the Land Tenure Center was established, because they had the idea that universities should be kind of brokers and set up universities in other parts of the world. And that would mean finding staff, getting set up laboratories and all of that sort of thing. Take care of the travel and get cars over there and all. And we just said that the logistics of a university are much easier handled from Washington than from Madison. And so we said, you set up the universities. But if you want to train some people, you want some people to help in the field of land tenure, or any other field, the university will help. And it wasn't until 1961, when Kennedy came in, that there was a provision for research money and student money, as well as subject matter area. And we were the first AID contract after Kennedy came in, set up the Land Tenure Center. I don't know how much money they've gotten now. A million and a half. how many years, 62 until 82?
19 years.
19 years at...
Approaching the 20th year.
20 years at...
I have a feeling, Ray, and see if you think this is accurate.
$10-15 million.
That many of the kinds of issues that are now discussed in the North-South Dialogue, many of them emerged in kind of the group of people that got here and among... There's been a lot of contact since around the world.
Don't tell Regan that. You might cut our throat all together.
Well, the issue is not whether or not any incumbent is right or wrong, it's whether or not you've got your finger on important issues.
Well, no question that, that the Land Tenure Center is about the only one of the government agencies that has continuously been working on those kinds of problems.
And there's 20 years of international dialogue represented in that center.
But it's having a hard time now. Have you got a copy of our oil shale report? You got three extra copies.
It's a little more, a little broader than that, isn't it? What do you mean when you say?
The white one. That one's the oil shale.
Oh, this one here. No,
yeah.
I don't have that one.
Right.
Take one.
You want one? Do you have one, Doc?
No, but split it with me.
Okay.
I mean, you look at it and I'll look at it. Okay. Right. If you're down to three copies.
My sister's kids are all...
I have a feeling that Ray is quitting the discussion this afternoon, don't you?
That's fine.
Before this project is ended, there's a... I think another thing that ought to be explored, I mean, not this afternoon, I'd be willing to come back at it another time. We've talked quite a bit about events and the order and the things that led up to them. I think there's an underlying philosophical issue that I've heard Ray discuss many times that I'd like to see if we can in another session sometime get on tape. And that is the interrelationship between people and local governments, and then the local governments and the non-local governments. And how, as these things get more and more complicated, you can keep that contact alive. And I think maybe that now is not the time, but I'd like to see
that's just basic. I mean, I don't know how you get at it.
Well, I would like the chance to try and draw you out on that.
Make a little note, John, to talk about the Voyager Village development with Ray.
Maybe you have to do it through case studies, but nevertheless, I'd like to see that in the tapes, Ray.
I think that's a...
Because
well, we kind of got started on that. Yeah. The Voyager Village is part of this lakeshore development.
It is, but it's a really significant, I thought that was a significant moment in, you know, just being with you. And it seemed to me that in that development, and some of the concepts that you're talking about, John, were at least sorely tested and strained. If not ruptured.
it gets very muddy and very contentious, and you may not think you're getting far, but I have a feeling that out of this kind of process where you really get the creative breakthroughs in government, and I'd like to go after that. And maybe through a series of successes and failures that were cases.
I think kind of the question I have, you know, that I use in my relationship with the people I work with, the program is, how do you decide what is the most appropriate local level for the decision to be made at?
Well, if you
well, I think the most interesting one of all would be this forest crop thing.
Yeah.
I just got Jordal. I told Jordal the manuscript on his experiences in that 1 year, and that's a pretty good one, really. He doesn't say anything about the fact that we neutralized the northern counties by at the first meeting inviting the chairman of the Northern Counties Executive Committee and their technical assistant, Adrian DeFrand, to sit in on all the meetings. every one of them. And then before we came up with a recommendation to the committee, which the committee approved, before we came up to that committee with that, we went to Spooner and had the executive committee of the Northern Counties come in and go over all of the recommendations that had been made. And we even modified some at that time, brought them back down here, and the committee passed them, and the legislation passed about half a dozen votes against
them. You said and neutralized?
Two years before, Nelson said that he never got such heat on anything while he was governor or any other time as he got for vetoing the bill which would have given away the whole Forest Crop Program.
I can see an hour's discussion in this area, Doug, and I'd like to come back at it.
But that would be the place to show that more, because one of the things you had to cover up was withdrawal of land in a higher use. And you couldn't get, at that time, a definition of higher use.
How is that definition? Who makes that determination?
The definition.